Hello, and welcome to episode 22 of That Yoga Woman's podcast, a podcast where yogis, yoga teachers, and studio owners share stories of their lives on and off the mat. I'm Jules Buchanan, a yoga teacher and your host. This week, I'm talking to Rosie Lawson. I was actually introduced to Rosie from a previous interviewee from the podcast, Eva Patterson, from episode 9. So I'm looking forward to getting to know Rosie during this conversation. She works with Eva and teaches at her studio space, Choose You Yoga and Wellness Hub in Livingston, Scotland. As well as teaching yoga, Rosie is a coach and has a women's membership group all about self-development and self-care, incorporating coaching, yoga pranayama, meditation, and all the tools we use to manage our lives. In her LBY, that's Life Before Yoga, she worked in a corporate medical sales for 25 years. This was a high-stress job, so we'll find out more about what that entailed and what led Rosie towards teaching yoga and becoming a coach. Prior to that, Rosie was also an intensive care nurse, so she really knows about working in adrenaline-fueled, high-stress situations. I'll ask her more about where she worked and what her life was like. I know Rosie went through a period of feeling burnt out and lost, so I'm hoping she'll be kind enough to share what that experience was like for her and how she navigated her way out of those feelings to maintain focus on her goal of helping others. Rosie also runs teacher training and has hosted breathing and relaxation meditation sessions online, so I'll find out more about that and how she's managed her business through the pandemic, as well as what things look like for her going forwards. I really hope you enjoy listening to my conversation with Rosie. Also, I just want to add, if you're listening to this and you've listened to the podcast before and you like it, you've come back for more, please consider rating, reviewing and subscribing just to help more people find out about the podcast and have a listen. Thank you. Here we are. Here's episode 22 of the podcast. So Rosie, thank you and welcome to That Yoga Woman's podcast. Let's start by you explaining where you are right now. It looks like you're at home. Are you at home?
Yes, I'm at home.
So where's that? Whereabouts in the house are you?
So I am in a little office / studio at the front of my house.
Right. And where's your house?
So my house is in West Lothian, in a little village in West Lothian where we moved here 2 years ago.
So for those of us with rubbish geography, where's West Lothian in relation to Edinburgh and Glasgow?
So yes, it's kind of, I live on the outskirts of West Lothian, a bit nearer to Glasgow, so it's between Glasgow and Edinburgh.
And have you been in Scotland all your life? Like, were you brought up there?
Yes, brought up here, but in a different area.
Whereabouts are you brought up?
So I started my life in Fife, in a tiny little maternity hospital over there, which is quite funny. My dad was a miner and my mum was a community midwife. So they met and my mum was delivering his sister's baby. So that's how they met. And then the pit closed down, as you know, obviously they're. So we moved over to just outside Edinburgh, and that's where I spent most of my childhood.
And so just talking about nursing, that's a rubbish segue, but your first job was as an intensive care nurse. It must have been, I can't think of any word for it other than intense. It sounds a bit rubbish, intensive care. Yeah, it was intense. But I'm imagining it was a really high stress working environment. So can you just share a little bit more about what led you into nursing and what your role was like? Like, where were you working? What was your life like at that point?
Okay, so I did do something before I went to do my nursing training, but I didn't find it very satisfactory. I just felt like there was always something missing. I felt like I was supposed to be here for a higher purpose. And I'd always loved to help people, and my family were all nurses. So I felt like I'd kind of ignored my calling for long enough. So I went to do my nursing training, loved it. Worked in various jobs, including theatre, before I went into intensive care. But that was also a high-octane place to work. So I did really enjoy it, and I probably got quite addicted to the adrenaline and the buzz. But the downside of it was that you didn't sleep very well, and you constantly blurred the boundaries between where work finished and your leisure life started, really.
Was that because of the long hours or just carrying things around with you?
I think just not being able to empty my head.
Right.
Tunes, and always giving support to other people around about you. So when you became a little bit more senior and knew what you were doing, you were always keeping an eye on other people who were maybe there helping out. So yeah, I just knew that I was living on a knife edge.
Yeah. Wow. So you felt on your nerves a lot.
Oh, completely. Although I loved it, and the people getting better made it all worthwhile. But yeah, I was really feeling that this wasn't really for me. And also, if you're a nurse, you work all crazy hours. And if you want to have a family, get married and have a bit of a life, at that point, I think it's probably different now, but the lifestyle wasn't really there, you know, to support somebody who, and ideally I did want to get married and have a family.
So how long were you a nurse for?
So I was a nurse for about 7 years.
Wow, so that's a long time.
It is a long
time. It feels like a long time. To be on in that kind of high stress situation.
Yeah.
And can you share a high point from that time? I know you said about the people getting better made it worthwhile, but is there anything that stands out?
That was kind of something I struggled with. I think just actually a high point was being part of a team for me. So just that general camaraderie that you get in nursing. Yeah, probably the main point I can really remember is somebody walking out after being sick for about 90 days and being ventilated and really, really sick, thinking that there was absolutely no way they're back. So just being able to imagine how like the human spirit can really pull you through in those situations. So yeah, and actually one of the other high points was getting in trouble for laughing. I know that sounds a silly thing to say, but, you know, I always loved laughing, and that's when I got that actually, yeah, I did love laughing and the fun. So the fun in being part of a team, but actually seeing somebody who was absolutely not expected to live, walking out of there, holding his family's hand, was just amazing.
Oh, and how did you get in trouble for laughing? Did you laugh inappropriately? I'm imagining a scenario that's probably way worse than it is.
Nurses have got the most inappropriate sense of humour. You may not know that, Jules, but yeah, the completely evil sense of humour, really.
So you did laugh at something that was totally
dark. Well, the charge nurse was always saying, you're a bit too noisy, don't we, you know. So actually when I was going to change my job, she said, well, at least you'll be happy now because you'll be able to laugh. And I thought, oh my goodness. Because I was always saying, well, they're sleeping. And actually one man said, he was another patient that was very, very sick, said that he could remember my laughter. Way after, and way, like he was very, like he was paralyzed and sedated and on a ventilator.
Wow.
And I just thought, oh, wow.
But hopefully he meant in a good way.
He enjoyed it, yeah. He said, I always knew there was fun coming. And I was thinking,
aww.
So that was quite nice to think about that. But yeah,
that is nice.
A bit round of fun.
And then, so you went after that into medical sales. Now, I don't know much about that industry, but I would have thought that would be less stressful than being in intensive care. But is that right? I bet it was tough, was it? What was it like?
Yeah, so when I was leaving, people were saying, oh my goodness, how are you going to deal with that? You'll have targets, sales, things like that. And my answer was, you know, at least I'm not responsible for keeping a human being alive. I know that sounds really black. Again, it's like the nurse's humour though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I thought in some way, a target's a target. If you don't hit it, then the worst thing that can happen is you lose your job.
Yeah.
As a nurse, I had been feeling so enormously stressed and pressured to look after and keep these patients safe, that for me, it wasn't as stressful.
You got to laugh. Yeah, well, it makes total sense when you say it like that. Yeah, what's the target? Although it's like, if you've not had that, you know, responsibility for lives, and then to go into sort of numbers and sales targets doesn't seem half as important, does it? Yeah. Even though it is like sort of important for your role. I mean, was there a lot of targets? Like, what were the pros and what were the cons of that job?
So now, well, interestingly enough, I'm going to share you a wee story. When I went for the interview for the job, they said, well, what if the product that I would be selling wasn't okay for the person that you're going to sell it to? And I said, oh, I would just have to be honest and say it's not good. Don't use it for that.
And then yeah, but that went down like a sack of rubbish.
Oh, dear. But then inside of me, I thought, well, if that is the case, I don't want to work for these guys.
Yeah, because
I want to be honest. And I think that people in the medical sales industry, especially if you've been a nurse, are thinking you are ethical. So they were chuckling at that point, and I got the job. So I kind of knew that it was right for me. So the pros and the cons, I guess, like, I've always worked for a company that I really believed in, and I believed their products were the best, and so therefore it was easy. It wasn't like I was actually selling something.
Yeah, you were just telling people how good it was.
And saying, look, if I was a nurse, yeah, I probably would have loved to have used this. So it was actually really just like having friendships with people rather than, you know, actually selling.
Wow, that sounds like a good, that's all. I suppose it's about your integrity, isn't it?
And completely.
People got to believe if you sort of saying one thing and they believe you and then they'll buy from you. No, that's the plan. So you must have enjoyed it. It sounds like you did enjoy it. It doesn't even sound like work, really. But you were in that role, in that career for 25 years. So would you say you enjoyed it looking back now?
Yes. I think that latterly, I probably ignored my internal dialogue, and maybe worked for some people that didn't have as much integrity as I did. And what I eventually found, Jules, was there was a great discomfort inside of me often. So I would go to the sales conferences, listen to what they said, and then put my own slant on it when I came home. So it was almost like being a little bit dishonest. It started feeling like I was being a little bit dishonest somehow.
So was it that made you kind of reevaluate things? Because I know that you said you struggled with like burnout and a sense of just feeling really lost with things. Is that what made you reevaluate things?
Yeah, and I think when you're not really living your truth and you're living another existence that is away from who you really are, then it becomes uncomfortable, but you don't always recognize that's what it is. I knew that something was going on because my body was telling me that, and I developed anxiety and all sorts of things, but I didn't actually realize it was because I wasn't really living my truth and what I was supposed to be doing here. And then amongst all of that, we were going through infertility and the adoption process, which actually then I couldn't actually fathom out which was which, whether it was my job, my lifestyle, or just things that we were dealing with on a daily basis.
Wow. So there's a lot going on then. It wasn't just you were kind of in a role where you weren't 100% happy. That would blur the lines, wouldn't it? What you said before about having things going on in your personal life that would affect your work. You could have easily said, well, it could just be related to that. Mm-hmm. And that must have been a trying time. Like, what could you just explain a little bit more about the process that you went through? Did you try IVF?
Yeah. So we went through about 2 years. Stevie, the man I married, had a vasectomy when we met. So I knew right away that we couldn't have children, but I really loved him and I felt like this was the person I had been waiting for. So,
Where did you meet him? Just being nosy now.
Oh, no. In a pub, and I jumped on his back.
You were like, you're the man for me. Take me home.
That was a story.
Oh, that's a good one.
So, yeah. But, yeah, I knew very early on he was really honest, and he didn't actually know if he wanted children. And we said, oh, well, we'll deal with that, which is probably a bit silly, once we get married and we decide. So, yeah, once we got married, I really decided that I totally wanted children, which was quite tough because he wasn't really that sure. Mm. So we kind of hit a bit of a crossroads. And all my friends, I was just in my early 30s, all my friends were having babies all round about me, and it became quite tough. So we had lots of different investigations. Stevie had the surgery, not 100% successful. So, we went on a bit of a programme for 2 years where, yeah, we did all sorts of things. And then we finally went down the IVF route.
Mm-hmm.
So we had three lots of IVF, both where each of those resulted in embryos being implanted, but never ending up in a pregnancy. So that was quite heartbreaking. And it was also really tough on my marriage. So we, at times, because you're each dealing with your own grief, and neither the two of you can help one another. And a lot of my friends just didn't know what to say. They didn't like the sad Rosie. They quite liked the fun time Rosie that was, you know, fun and jumping on people's backs. But none of them knew what to say. So gradually I felt like my world had really got a lot smaller. So I actually stopped telling people about it each time I would go, because I couldn't actually deal with their sadness.
Yeah.
As well as dealing with my own loss, because each time felt somehow, because you see the little embryos on the screen going in, and you have this picture that this is going to be your baby. Mm. And so that was really tough.
Because I hadn't thought of it before, when you say you're having to deal with their sadness as well as your own, because you would want someone, if we had that conversation, I would want to come away from that thinking, oh, she's okay, really. Yes. And ultimately you're not. So no. To make myself feel better, I'd want to be like, you give me something good now. Say that it's going to be all right. Say that you've got a way out of it. And I suppose at the time there was no way out of it. That was just the situation. So you don't have that little high to give people to think, oh, it's okay. And off they go on their day. Mm-hmm. You were in just that bad place where you hadn't got a solution, and it weren't looking good.
Yeah.
Oh, it must have been really tough.
Yeah, that was tough. And then you would have people not wanting to tell you they were pregnant, and thinking that you would feel bad for them. And all you did was feel deep joy for them.
Mm.
And just like glad that it wasn't them in the situation. So then my husband is actually adopted, and he had always had a thing to explore adoption, so we decided we would do that. So we went through another 3 years of intense scrutiny, home visits, courses, all sorts of things to become adoptive parents. Wow. And we were approved finally, and amongst that, three times we went. So what happens then? I don't know if it still is the same.
When was this, Rosie? What kind of, how many years ago were you talking?
This would have been we got Liam in 2003, so it would be about 99 to 2002.
I had no idea it took that long.
Well, it doesn't now, and the government have actually made a lot of changes so that there isn't such a long time, because there's so many children are waiting for parents.
Yeah.
So, So then you get to see these little children, they send you the stuff, and you get to look at their photos and see whether or not this is somebody that you're interested in. So twice, what they do is, anybody that's interested, it becomes like a bit of a raffle, really. They go to the panel and then they debate your suitability against somebody else, which then, if you're not picked, it kind of puts you down a little bit further, and you start feeling really rubbish.
Yeah.
So this happened twice. And then the third time we got Liam, which
is lucky.
Interesting. So, but yes, and amongst all that, but I wanted to tell you a wee interesting story about manifestation there.
Yep.
Sometimes you know, if your life is too busy, too full, things don't come in. So I started believing, well, maybe I'm too busy. So I got a little room ready. I put a little bed in it and I put a little wardrobe in it and I started filling the wardrobe with clothes. And my friends were all saying, this is mad. Stop doing this because that you shouldn't be doing this. You're going to get your heart broken again. But something inside me told myself to do that. So we then got Liam. And the first day we met him, he was 2.5. And he was looking out of a window. And then when he came in, I said, oh, hello. And he said, oh, hello, you're my mummy and I've been waiting on you.
Oh.
I know. So I was like, oh my God.
Those are the perfect words to say, aren't they?
I mean, he didn't mean it like I've been waiting all my life on you. He just meant he'd been waiting at the window. But of course, when I shared this with the team that I was working with at the time, they were just a mess.
Yeah. Oh, that's so emotional.
But that brought us challenges as well, because it was a 2.5-year-old who actually had really bad tantrums. And I thought, I went from like being this business person who would go to all these business meetings to having like a 2.5-year-old with no support network, because a lot of mums are pregnant together. So
yeah.
I had to find my way in there.
So yeah, because they've already kind of met at the, not at the gates at that point, but they've kind of, there's been the NCT and there's been the kind of, all the baby groups and stuff. You're kind of coming in late, aren't you, to all that?
Yeah, totally.
And so what happened with work at that point then? Was it all of this stuff was going on and were you still trying to manage your career at this point with medical sales? Okay.
Yes. But what they did at work was they gave me parental leave. So I got the same leave as somebody who was pregnant, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And I was so grateful for that. But as you can imagine, so many people were saying, are you messing with me, when I suddenly said I'm getting this 2.5-year-old? Because I had stopped really telling people other than a few of my friends, because we had had so many disappointments and so many losses already.
Mm.
So, everybody was like, oh my goodness, what a surprise. So I went off for a year and looked after Liam. And, it was amazing. But the toughest year of my life by far.
Yeah, I bet it was. So how was it when it was time to go back? Were you happy to go back, or what was the situation then?
I was really happy to go back to get some adult company.
Mm.
But there was a lot of guilt in there, thinking nobody can look after Liam the way that I can look after him.
Right.
Because I had been given this job, if you like, and picked from others to look after him. So I think that was where a lot of my anxiety really stemmed from, the separation. So I would be like driving, I would be maybe in Glasgow and then I would hit some traffic and just start having like these total panic attacks because I wasn't there to pick him up from nursery and things like that. So that kind of became, I suppose like one of my accompaniments for this life I had now chosen. And I was also thinking, this is what you chose. You know, but feeling really unhappy and really ungrateful because there was so much in it that I had to then manage.
Yeah.
So, that was quite tough.
So it sounds tough. So what happened after that? Like I guess you had to make a choice then, or?
Well, eventually what happened was I kind of rediscovered yoga, which was amazing. So I felt like the only time I felt at peace was when I was in a yoga class, but hilariously I didn't have time to practice yoga because my life was so busy. And I didn't really get that I wasn't looking after myself. I was completely again doing this burnout thing that I had done in intensive care, and realized eventually I was going to have to make some changes. But, you know, like everybody, financially we were tied. We had a fairly big house, we had a lifestyle, you know, so we would actually go from holiday to holiday surviving, which I guess a lot of people do, you know, waiting for Friday for the weekend where you can go out and have some fun and then waiting for the holiday. So my life ended up like a waiting for and not an actual being in, if you understand what I mean.
I totally understand what you mean. Yes, I think maybe that'll resonate with a lot of listeners. It certainly does with me. Similar sort of having that high-powered job, the weeks were just written off. We were waiting for the weekend, splashing money around to make things feel good. And then, yeah, holidays, you'd be in a good place and then you'd be back and then it would be the next, when's the next holiday? What's, it's all for the weekend. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So just talking about yoga specifically then, when did you first discover it? Because I heard that you said you rediscovered it. So when did you first discover it?
So it was when we moved house and I had kind of was having this separation from all my friends and family and I was living a little bit away from them. I took a yoga class, interestingly, because I quite like the gym, but I get a little bit chunky. So when I start training, I get a little bit chunky. So they had suggested to do that because of how yoga works on stretching the muscles and lengthening. So I thought, yeah, okay. And the first time I stepped into Warrior 2, I can totally remember that whole thing. Oh my God, I've arrived home.
Oh, so that's amazing.
That was like 2000, in the year 2000. And I can completely visualize exactly where I was, who was teaching me, and just that feeling of being at home. And had I really had enough courage, I would have gone and learned how to be a yoga teacher right there and then. But I felt people like me don't become yoga teachers. Just the same, you know, the same old thing to keep you tied to whatever it is you're tied to. So, yeah.
So that was where you first discovered it. Mm-hmm. So now the opportunity's coming. You're not very happy with work and you've got your sort of, I guess, 3-4-year-old baby now, not toddler. When did you decide to teach and where did you train?
Okay, so again, it was conversations on a holiday. So Liam was 14 and we took him on this big, massive holiday to New York.
Oh, so it was quite a while after that. Oh,
it was a long time.
Just ah.
It was actually 2015.
Okay. So you were still doing your sale. Oh, of course, because you were in that. Yeah, such a long time.
Just miserable, juggling, but actually being incredibly successful in my career.
That's good though, isn't it? It's good.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But actually, I was still searching for that. Don't feel happy. Don't feel right.
I mean, it's not surprising though, is it? Because you're saying it's like, although you were in sales, you didn't feel like you were having to sell stuff because you really believed in the product. You know, you've got the technical knowledge because of your previous role. It should have been a breeze, really. Like, and someone who was happy to talk to people, and so no wonder.
But there was just no no substance to it. No, like, this is what I've been sent here to do.
Yeah, and then you're step by step waiting for the next. And money does, like, I don't know if you felt this, Rosie, but I felt like that money made it a bit easier. So yeah, almost the money was a bit of an anesthetic to kind of like keep you going.
Yeah. Completely. What will I get? What will I buy? What will like sort that like wound almost?
Yeah.
You know, like that. What will solve it? Oh yeah, I'll just throw some money at it, or, you know, and that was the thing, I guess. So we were in this big holiday in New York, and Stevie said to me, my husband, what would you do if money was no object? And I said, oh, right. So then I said, well, I would like to leave a legacy in this world and be known for something. And right now, probably the only thing I'm known for is like being a pretty good salesperson, maybe a nurse, but a long, long time ago. But I wanted something that my family would be proud of. So that's when I started. I said I would love to have a yoga center, because what I disliked about doing yoga in the gyms was it could be anybody that rolled up. It never seemed to be consistent, and there was no yoga place as such out here where we lived. So that was my plan. I said I would like bankroll this place and have yoga teachers. And Stevie said, well, why don't you teach? It's something you really love anyway. So I said that, like those words that have become like my strap line. People like me don't become yoga teachers. And he said, well, why not? You know, maybe joyous, noisy people should be yoga teachers. It shouldn't just be people who are quiet and peaceful. So I said, yeah, okay, that's what I'll do. So we came back. I Googled yoga teaching training and started looking. And then I put an inquiry into one school. And then I didn't apply. Oh, I think I just wrote my name and address. And then I thought, oh, I don't know. This is so comfortable. This is so easy. A bit like that. Why would I change it? You know, everything's okay. And so one day I had left one of my customers' offices and I had sat down to just write some things in my diary. And they walked past me and I could overhear them. And they were actually talking about me. And it was like one of those moments where you're like, that, make this stop. Make it stop. I don't want to hear this. And they were actually saying, yeah, she's a pest. She comes in here all the time dressed in her fancy stuff. Like, not got a clue what nursing's about. Like, not. And I was like, oh, my God. Make no. her stop. And I was like, so, I didn't know what to do with myself, Jules.
Oh.
Because in my heart, I had been doing a really good job.
Yeah.
And a really worthwhile job. And often these were people that I would run in at 8 o'clock at night and drop things off and things like that. And I thought, oh no.
Oh, I feel like crying for you.
Oh, it was horrendous. And I couldn't tell anybody because I just felt like the last few years that I had been doing this just were wiped out just by that one person saying that. But then equally I thought, well, if that's what my world is built on, other people thinking I'm doing a good job rather than me knowing, because I think I knew in my own heart what I wasn't where I belonged. So interestingly enough, a bit like that manifestation, the yoga school phoned me that day and said there was a course starting on the Friday. And so I just said, book me and I'll pay it right now.
I bet they were like, yes. I bet they were like, that was the easiest sale ever.
Oh, I thought, oh my God, what if I can't do this? What if I don't like them? What if people like me, you know, all the big things that come up when you're going to make some big changes.
Yeah.
But I went and I loved them right from the word go.
So what did you do financially? Because I'm expecting, like a lot of us, you had to take kind of a chunky pay cut, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, obviously what I did was I kept my job that year that I was training.
Yeah. And then did you tell anyone at work you were training?
Yes. Yeah. And they were all delighted. You know, I don't think they realised that this was my escape plan.
No. I had exactly the same. My boss was really supportive, thought it was really good. And then he was like, what? Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So they were all supportive. So you were carried on working while you did your training.
And then
what happened after that?
And so after that, then I just started saying yes to whoever asked me to do yoga, cover classes, teach classes. I taught in all different places and really got comfortable with me being a teacher. And then my mum got really sick. And so I spoke to my bosses and said, you know, what about dropping some hours? And they were saying, yeah, that's fine, we'll do that, we'll make it happen. And it never happened. And then it came to conference and I was due in conference the next day, and I just said to Stevie, I really don't want to go. And he said, well, just phone them and tell them you're not going and just pack it in. So I did. And everybody had an absolute freak out at work. Yeah. My director then phoned me and said, oh, you know, you should. But in amongst all that, I knew my mum was really sick and I didn't know how long she had. And I knew that I wasn't doing the job really other than for other people wanting me to stay. So he said, take a week off, think about it and come back to me. So after conference, I didn't go to conference. I just took the week off and I said, I don't want to do this job full time. I want you either to reduce my hours and I'll work as a coach, a wellness person inside work as well. Because in amongst that, I went and did all my coaching as well after that. And that's where I knew that my passion lay in helping people that were maybe in corporate like me but didn't know how to deal with anxiety day to day and how to actually live a balanced life. So he then dropped my hours. So I built my yoga business on the side and they kept saying, yeah, don't worry, we'll get you coaching. That's what you'll do. You'll be our coach inside the company. But eventually it just wasn't happening. And then I was a year on and I thought, they're never going to do this because I'm worth too much money. I'm bringing in too much money.
Yeah, you're too good a salesperson to step aside. Yeah.
So again, I had one of those moments where I just said, right, okay, that's me. I'm going to finish in July and I'm finishing for good. So,
and did they accept that?
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't just say, oh, no, take a bit of time to cool down and have a think about it.
They were saying, we'll move you out of that role. But I said, no, you've been going to do that for a year and nothing's happened. All that I was doing was doing a full-time job in 3 days and getting paid less money for it.
And I think that's such a common thing amongst women that have full-time work. I think it is. Not full-time, part-time work. If they're working part-time, I think the expectation is that they can just fit it, like do the same hours. I had a friend from university and she was a solicitor a long, long time ago now. And she went on maternity, came back and was part-time. I'm doing the quotation marks because it was part-time, but she was billing the same hours. You know, it's like when your sister billing the same hours she was doing. Before she was like, I don't get this. Like, I don't know how I'm doing it. And they were making the same money, but she was obviously on 20% less because she was doing 3 days instead of five.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
I know. But I think that is the thing. And I think that sometimes you do that to keep the balance because you need that certain level of money. But eventually I just thought, I can't do this. I was really not enjoying my job and knew I didn't belong there anymore.
And you touched on coaching. You said you've done your coaching qualification. Like, how did that come about? How did you get into that?
So really the reason I went to do this was because part of the yoga course that I studied did a little bit of neuro-linguistic programming in it. So I went, and I'm going to do in quotation marks, to learn to become a better teacher so that I could read the room better. I was able to understand a little better what was going on with body language and things. However, it was like another journey of self-discovery. And I realised a lot of this things that I did, I was self-sabotaging my own life because I was scared to move forward and transform and, you know, so, yeah, so that was really interesting. So I did my NLP qualifications and then I did my master's in NLP and also a little bit of hypnotherapy.
Wow.
Which was amazing. So I knew that I could use these skills to help others transform.
So what does working with clients in that way give you? I know you're helping them to transform. How does it help you?
I'm just kind of laughing now because it just makes me feel as if I'm exactly where I belong. It helps me, that gives me the joy of helping them discover they already have what they need inside. Oh. Yeah. So most of us struggle for that and we're looking for something to put on our wounds, like shopping, drink, drugs, coffee, whatever it is. We're all looking for something to sort of self-medicate and stop the pain in a way. But we often look outside ourselves and we look to others to provide that. But knowing that actually the power is already inside you, it's a bit like the Wizard of Oz. you know, the Good Witch and the Wizard of Oz. So I think that I'm like that Good Witch with the Wizard of Oz, and helping people discover they have everything that they need, but we just have to find a little bit stillness, because often people are a little bit scared of stillness. They don't want the stillness because they're not sure what's underneath it.
That's so interesting. I suppose it's like when you've got people in their relaxation and they're just fidgeting and they can't wait to get up. I was one of those people, like, oh, it's the lie down bit now. I hate this bit. I need to leave. This is like a waste of time. I've got to go.
I used to run out and go, no, I don't want that. And I didn't really realise it was because I couldn't bear the stillness, because underneath the noise was who I really was, and I didn't really want that because it didn't fit my purpose right now.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's funny. So thinking about then physical space and venues, like you hire, because we got introduced from Eva, who was in episode 9, Eva Patterson, and do you hire space from her at the Wellness Hub? Like, how did you meet Eva and how did that arrangement come about?
Okay, so Eva was one of my teachers.
Nice. Okay.
That's how I knew Eva.
Right. So she was part of your 200 hour.
Not necessarily. So not part of my training course.
Okay. But part of one where of the you were going.
That I would go to. I'm one of the people that taught me.
So do you teach? Well, hopefully when it opens soon, are you going back there to teach in some of her space?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I know it will be very different because we were back briefly. In September, but that will be very different, I guess, again.
And just thinking about pre-pandemic, where else were you teaching? What did your business look like at that point? So you said, like most of us, you come out and you're like, yes, 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 I'll teach there, I'll teach here. So what were you doing?
So I was teaching in two or three different gyms in a hotel. But just interestingly, before the pandemic, I had stopped working for because I think I had something like 12 classes on the go at one point. Mm-hmm. And all that was happening was I was just filling my day with more classes.
Yep.
I just then realised, this is just the same as it was before. I'm just keeping myself just as busy as it was before. And I wasn't really exploring my coaching.
Right.
That was where I know that I can make a real difference, not just in people that want to do yoga. So, and the kind of transformation part. So,
So it's been an opportunity really for you to redress the balance between coaching and yoga then in your business?
Yes.
And so tell me about your membership group. Like did you establish that as because of this pandemic caused the slowdown? Like, how did that evolve?
Okay. So the membership was always something that I had really, really been interested in doing, really because I felt like I would have loved something like that when I was busy working and didn't quite know what was going on, how to help myself. So that was where the membership came about, and it's called the Sisterhood. Mm-hmm. So I do a little bit of coaching in there, and so people attend a little live or either on Zoom or on Vimeo. And we do a little bit of kind of everything, because I believe if you want to make some changes, you have to kind of do everything, including like work on your energy, work on your mindset, work on your body, work on your breath. Because if you do one, it's a bit like only eating carbs or only eating fat. You know, if you don't have everything balanced, then I don't believe that you can transform properly. You can tick the boxes, but not really make the changes. Mm-hmm. And I also think it's helpful to be in an environment where you're supporting each other. So at the moment, my group is a kind of a hybrid between Facebook and Zoom. So I do a little coaching session. I record a little video on a yoga session around whatever topic we're discussing. And then I do a little meditation on that people can do daily. and a little bit of breath work, because I've recently done a 6-day breath work course with a lady from London. So mm-hmm. I'm also, it's called the Alter State. So I'm also really interested in how we can completely change our being within about 10 minutes really quickly. So yeah, I've been playing around with that recently as well. So yeah, I love that.
And do you feel like that's how your business is going to remain? Obviously, you're going to go back to teaching some yoga in person, but the coaching side, is that working well on Facebook and Zoom? Like, how are you finding that?
Yeah, so I will keep that there because a lot of people aren't local anyway.
Okay, yeah.
So it's actually widened my world.
Right, good.
So that has been a really good thing, you know. I will eventually look to do sessions live with people because, as you know, we like energy and we get energy from the people that we're around. So yeah, that would be quite nice to do live workshops again and mm-hmm. get involved. But the sisterhood will stay as it is so that it's not just available for people who are local.
Yep, makes sense. So what do the next few months look like for you, Rosie? Because we're opening up as per the roadmap, like how do you see the next couple of months going?
I'm not sure at all, Jules. I know that I will continue with my coaching and that will be online or that will be face-to-face depending on what the roadmap looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe online is here to stay. And I think we will, it has opened so many doors for me to do trainings and things like that from people that aren't necessarily local.
Yeah.
So if they're not local to me, then it means I'm not paying a fortune to go and travel and stay there and be in their class and things like that. So I will do some classes face-to-face, but I will definitely keep my classes online as well, because all too often, as you know, in the winter, then people think, I don't really want to go out on a cold night like this. So yeah, and I think people are just feeling a little bit not too sure about being with people again.
Yeah, it's going to take a bit of time, isn't it?
Definitely
think about that the dark nights. It's nicer now when it's like blue skies, sun shining. It's like that where I am. So mm-hmm. yeah, I'd imagine it's going to be different again in the winter. So lastly, and ask everyone this, Rosie, what are you most proud of in your life so far?
So probably adopting my son and being a mum, becoming a mum. Which was something that I had wanted for such a long time, but didn't think I was going to be able to do. And probably just navigating through motherhood and transforming myself, having enough courage to transform myself, to put my hand up and say, actually, this isn't right for me anymore. I'm not going to wait until I retire and then live my life. I want to live my life today.
Yeah.
So, just that, having the courage to stand up and do things a little bit differently, although adoption isn't for everybody. Just being brave, I think, like, and starting to feel the way I felt when I was maybe 5 or 6 and I thought that the world was just open to everybody. And then when you get a little bit older, you start putting these bars on your cage and saying, that's not for me. So I think just doing that inner work and learning to be comfortable with the stillness as well. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, totally. That's really inspirational. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for asking me.
So now I need to ask you as well, if you weren't a yoga teacher, what would you be?
Oh, wow. I don't know. That's a really hard one, because I feel like I'm doing exactly what I want to say, something like a fairy. So,
well, that's not a real job.
I feel like sparkling things. I would love the other thing I do quite like is like being in a cafe and chatting to people and having like, so I would probably have a little cafe selling vegan stuff.
That's more acceptable than
I might still dress like a fairy or something like
that's
that.
That's okay.
I have like a little bit of sparkle on.
I love that. That's the funniest answer.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, because most people say jobs that you like, actual job or like some, yeah.
Well, who's to say that a fairy is not a real job?
No, I know, I'm dismissing it and that's horrible. It's awful of me. And I know like probably loads of fairies have just died now because I've said that. That's what happens, isn't it? It's so awful. That's really bad. I hadn't even thought about that. Peter Pan, oh, it's all coming back now. So I better move on quickly before I get myself into more trouble about for our quick fire questions. So just say what you think, Rosa. There's no right or wrong. Just say what you think. Okay, you ready?
Mm-hmm. Ready.
Late to bed or early to rise?
Early to rise.
Favorite tune to dance to?
Journey. Don't Stop Believing.
Who do you look up to?
My son. Oh. He taught me so many lessons.
What's your favourite film?
Steel Magnolias.
Mm. On a scale of 1 to 10, how cool are you?
Oh, I'm probably about a 1.
Mountainside or lakeside?
Lakeside.
Tom Hanks or Leonardo DiCaprio?
Tom Hanks.
What's your star sign?
Aries.
Ah, same. Snap. Ooh. Who would you swap lives with just for a day?
Probably my dog.
Countryside or city?
Mm. Countryside.
If you owned a yacht, what would you call it?
Mm. Oh, I don't know. Probably fairy. My fairy yacht.
What is at the top of your bucket list, Rosie?
Top. Oh. I would like to have a place at the beach. I don't know if that's such a thing. It's not so much about doing somewhere. It's just somewhere I feel I belong.
Describe your baddest and brightest leggings.
I've just had a cult, interestingly enough. I had purple ones that had like stars and moons at the bottom, which were quite wild.
And they've gone, have they?
They've gone. They didn't make the cult.
What's your favourite place in the whole wide world?
At the beach.
Any beach?
No, the beach in Ibiza.
Oh, is there a specific beach? I've never been to Ibiza.
Oh, it's just amazing. So there's this little shack that we used to hang out in. It's a bit more like developed now, as is everything. So it's a place called Santa Eulalia in Ibiza. And the original place was called Mangoes. I can't even tell you where what the place is called now. Oh, Babylon Beach. Babylon Beach.
So is this back in the day? When are we talking, when you used to go to Ibiza? It sounds like you're an Ibiza hangout person, an older person who like used to go to Ibiza back in the day. Is that right?
Well, we've been going there for nearly 22, 23 years.
See, yes. So why have we not talked about this earlier in the podcast?
It's just like that is my sole place. So
wow.
If ever like I have a lot of money, I would always go and either stay there or buy a place there.
Right.
Because it's definitely my soul place.
And why is that? Is it music related?
Just everything. It's very spiritual, very hippie, very yoga like.
I feel like I should be going. No, I know. I feel like I should be going.
It just feels like home. I tell you why I felt like that, because so often when we didn't have Liam, we would go there and sit and make dreams. And when I was having my IVF, I would always take myself back to that little beach where I sat there and looked whenever like things were getting really bad or I was having my treatment. especially during some of them are a bit uncomfortable and painful. So I would take myself back there. So what the first year we were in, we had Liam, we took him there.
Oh,
and it just like completed the circle for me.
Yeah, that's lovely. That's a lovely story. The last question, that wasn't very quick fire, but I think it was a worthy detour. No, a worthy detour. I loved that. What's your favorite yoga pose?
Definitely the warrior two that I found myself in the first time.
Yeah, it had to be. I could have guessed that, couldn't I? That was good. So lastly, Rosie, we just need to ask you your Savasana or Shavasana sounds. It doesn't work if I say Shavasana, so it has to be Savasana sounds. But have you got a favourite music or any advice, a track that you can recommend people have a listen to?
It's Mother Divine.
Yeah.
And it's the Devi Prayer.
Okay. I think we've had this one before. I can't remember who said it, but... that rings a bell.
Amazing.
I didn't think, I knew this would happen, but
The other one, I could give you another one that I quite liked, was the Gladiator.
What? It's called the Gladiator?
So it's the theme tune from the Gladiator.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it is an amazing Shavasana as well, especially if you're doing like some visualization.
Oh, wow. I hadn't even thought about something like that. Okay.
It is amazing, especially if you're taking somebody into a really deep visualization.
Then
you give them like, the rise up part and they just feel like they can.
Oh, that's lovely. Oh,
that's a nice one.
Thank you for sharing that. And thank you so much for chatting to me. It's been really great getting to know you. And thank you for being so open and talking to us as well. Listeners, you can contact Rosie through her Facebook, which is Rosie Lawson Coaching, or you can reach her on email. It's rosie@rosielawson.com. And we're spelling Rosie R-O-S-I-E, R-O-S-I-E, not with a Y. Thank you so much, Rosie. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, thank you. Thank you for asking me.
You've been listening to That Yoga Woman's podcast with me, Jules Buchanan. If you like the show, please tell your friends about it, share it on social media, rate it, write a nice review, and subscribe to That Yoga Woman's podcast. Links and information can be found on the episode page in the podcast section of my website, www.thatyogawoman.com/podcast. If you'd like to show some support for the podcast, you can do that through PayPal. The donation link is www.paypal.me/thatyogawoman. The last thing I'll mention is my line of organic cotton yoga-inspired tops. I designed a small range of best tees and sweatshirts that are perfect to teach or do yoga in. Have a look online, check out my shop on my website, www.thatyogawoman.com/shop. Have a look around my store and make an order. See you soon.